It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret. 2 weeks ago today, a 750-acre wildfire broke out in south-central Wisconsin, launching a multi-agency response to contain 30-foot flames.
A wildfire ripped through hundreds of acres of a wildlife area.
Continuing coverage of a massive fire in Green Lake County this
morning. Two residences have been evacuated so far.
Are at the scene. They're battling flames right now.
It's all just ash, completely torched.
A massive brush fire in Green Lake County has now been contained.
In Green Lake County, fast winds pushed the Big Island Fire through the White River Marsh State Wildlife Area on a high fire danger day. The cause of that fire is still under investigation. Today, we're learning more about the multi-agency response from two responders. Doug Dewhurst is the interim fire chief with the City of Berlin Fire Department in Green Lake County. Lucas Schmidt is forestry supervisor for the Department of Natural Resources in Waupaca. Lucas, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Glad to be here, Rob.
And Doug, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Doug, I want to start with you and walk us through when you first heard the report of this fire. Your department was the first on the scene. What happens between getting that notification and summoning the crew?
We got paged out between 4 and 4:30, and on the page it said that we had a marsh fire and it was nearing some buildings on Disterhaf Road. So we proceeded to the fire station, the crews, and I stated to everybody that we're heading right to Disterhaf Road because our first objective is to protect buildings and houses. So that's where we headed.
Now we end up with this fire, 750 acres it consumes. Doug, bring us to that moment when you're first pulling up toward that fire. Paint us a picture of what you saw.
Well, as we're heading out of town, we can see the black smoke coming up into the sky, and we can tell it's more than a couple acres that it was came in as. So we're heading down. We get to Disterhaf Road where the buildings are. We take all of our equipment down there because it sounded like it was really close to the buildings. It was a little ways off, so we were able to set up and get prepared for it. As we did that, we turned the other trucks around and took them out of the driveway and back up on the County Road D because the fire was fast approaching there. And we knew we had to try to do our best to stop it so it wouldn't jump the highway. And then about that time, the DNR showed up and they then kind of took over.
And Lucas, let's bring the DNR into the story now. How does the State Department of Natural Resources get informed about the wildfire and know that, hey, this is a big one, we got to take some action here?
So we're very similar to fire departments. We're paged out at the same time as them. Part of our prep work going into spring is that we work very closely with fire departments through training, letting them know kind of the expectations and terminology and tactics of how we want to fight the various types of fires. So Jared LaBoose out of Wautoma was actually the first one that would have made contact with Berlin Fire Department and County Highway D. While he was en route, he requested through DNR dispatch additional units to respond to that fire because you were starting to do the size up just off the smoke column and then what Berlin Fire Department was telling was happening on scene. So we mobilized our workforce, you know, very similar to fire departments. And then when the first DNR person is on scene with the fire departments, generally command kind of transitions to DNR. And then we work collaboratively with our partners, being Sheriff's Office, for evacuations, fire departments for structural protection and assistance on the wild inside. So I was part of the initial request and responded out of Waupaca. Probably closer to 5:30 is when I arrived on scene.
And Lucas, how do you and your colleagues make the determination of, you know, how many local departments to reach out to given what you know about the fire at any given moment?
It starts up with what we call the size up, and we get that first in from the fire department, and we're looking for what fuel types the fire is burning in, the fire behavior, potentially how many structures are at risk. Then we also get DNR and DNR airplane overhead that helps us assess where that fire is moving into, and then we're also looking at fuels downwind. So it's a combination of all that, and really it's the fire potential growth that we're assessing when we make that resource order. And then we have to match that resource order with the fuel type. So in this case, normally we come to the table with a lot of bulldozers and with plows on the back, but bulldozers aren't real effective in marsh wet areas. They sink. So we need to order specialized equipment. We call them low ground units or marsh units. They have low ground pressure and can go and work out in the marsh. And then we also requested additional units from Fish and Wildlife Service out of Horicon and Nisida, because they have additional specific equipment that can go into the marsh, and that was very critical.
Doug, can you talk about the conditions facing your crew there? You had the fire, you're trying to protect these buildings. As Lucas was mentioning, there's marsh, there were some wind conditions. Give us a sense of what you were up against here as you started, as the first on the scene to fight this fire.
Well, as the fire was going through the marsh, due to the wind, it was moving quite rapidly. We had flames anywhere from 10 to 30 feet tall at times. You know, it's moving at us, so we're trying to be prepared, trying to make sure that our guys are in a safe location so nothing happens, plus then take care of the residents and the outbuildings. They had a barn and a pole-type shed at this location. And then during all this, we're also calling our neighboring departments for equipment to help, knowing that we're going to need it too. So for us, it got pretty hairy for a while, but we got it under control to protect the buildings.
Lucas, what goes into determining when to evacuate, how wide an area to evacuate in the face of a fire, a quickly spreading fire like this one?
We base all our decisions off a priority list of life, property, resource, meaning we'll do everything to save a life and potentially sacrifice a home or a building as long as we're safe doing it. And we may let 15, 20 acres burn because we'll choose to protect a structure. So we'll look at how many structures are immediately threatened, and then we'll immediately go and start looking downwind of that fire, because that fire is moving. So how many structures are downwind? And we'll also look at road closures, because, I mean, evacuation and road closures kind of going hand in hand to meet that number one priority of life safety.
Doug, physically, what were you doing here to stop this fire? Because people might think of, okay, you're extinguishing it, but there also might be fire breaks, that sort of thing. What were you and your fellow departments doing to stop this fire from reaching these structures?
We had a hose line stretched out around the structures that were attached to a normal fire truck. And then we have a UTV on tracks that we are trying to get out and get ahead of it a little bit. We had grass rigs, which are pickups with water on them, up on County D, trying to keep it from getting too close to the highway. We prefer to fight the fire from the burn side, but sometimes you have to be prepared to have it hit it head on. Then we had other units coming in with more track units so we could get out in the marsh, get towards the fire, and start suppressing it if we could.
Well, that's interesting. You fighting the fire, that makes sense from the side that's already burnt as opposed to the spreading active fire zone. How much choice do you have in that, given the conditions, or are you sometimes stuck in that position of having to be out in front of it?
Well, we try to get behind it as soon as we can, because winds change. The fire itself can help the winds change, and we just don't want nobody to get caught in the wrong spot at the wrong time. So as the fire's coming like this, when it was coming to the buildings, it did get to some shorter grass, so we were able to, it slows down when it gets to that, so we were able to work on the extinguishment. Once we got to that, then we could get on the backside of it. When we're up on the highway, you got the blacktop road, which is, you know, so wide, so you can try to keep it contained there so it doesn't jump the road. And you got a little bit, because obviously the road won't burn, so you're on a little bit of a break there.
And Lucas, it sounds like you're sort of quarterbacking this whole thing over the eight-hour effort to contain the flames here. What kind of conditions are you watching? What kind of calls are you making as the situation evolves, changes maybe really quickly?
Working with the National Weather Service to get a spot forecast, that's real key. So we're trying to anticipate what winds are going to do, when RHs may change, the relative humidity may go up. Because really temperature, wind, relative humidity, those are the primary factors that really affect fire behavior. And knowing the later we go into the evening, the more the weather is on our side versus the middle of afternoon. So we're looking at that. And again, as incident commander, we're coordinating with the sheriff's department, any other partners such as Fish and Wildlife that may be bringing resources to the fire scene. I'm in contact with my representatives down in Madison so they can inform the governor and the secretary what's going on. And then also kind of laying out the overall priorities and objectives for the fire and then coordinating the resources directly on that fire. As Doug was mentioning, holding County Highway D was real key to this. So we kind of had a burning out operation where we were lighting fire in advance of the main fire to remove fuel, widen that break, and then also wet down areas downwind of that fire. And that's where the fire departments became a real critical piece to holding County Highway D in this case.
Doug, this sounds grueling to me. Can you talk about the physical and mental demands, for that matter, on you and your crew as you're in the face of this fire?
Yeah, so it gets very hot. So, one of the things we then had to do is find some water to bring into the situation for everybody to keep hydrated. For me, I was working up by Lucas and, it was demanding as far as they needed resources and we had to find them and, call our dispatch looking for help from lots of other fire departments and communities. So it does take a toll on it. The guys all did real well. We came back and we had a little talk about it and everybody was ready for bed.
We are talking about a multi-agency response to a 750-acre wildfire just a couple weeks back now in Green Lake County, getting a firsthand look at what it takes to contain a fire like this. We've got Lucas Schmidt with the DNR's Forestry Department, Doug Dewhurst, Interim Fire Chief of the Berlin Fire Department, first on the scene there. Lucas, 750 acres, you kept it down under four digits, which we've had much bigger fires spread in Wisconsin. If I have this right, no fatalities, I know, no structures lost. I can call this a win. Is that fair to say?
Yes, I would call it a win. Anytime you can have a fire get this big and have as many people respond as what they did with no injuries, no damage to property, that becomes a win for a negative situation.
And Lucas, how do we know that it's completely out, right? Because we could see, oh, great, there's no flames, but there's always the concern that there might be embers that can restart something if the wind picks up again. How do you confirm that we're done here?
So the day one shift, we did staff it overnight, and then we transitioned to a whole nother crew the following day. They worked it that entire day, and we had staff out on the third day. And then after that, we could not find any more hot spots at that time, but we're continuing to monitor it, meaning we'll have aircraft when they fly over, look at it. We'll periodically go out and patrol and check the control lines. And we've had Mother Nature give us some well-needed precipitation here in the last week where it's contained, it's under control. We haven't just declared it out yet. I would expect that to be happening shortly in the future. Again, we like to err on the side of caution on a fire this big and make sure that we patrol it adequately so that there are no escapes after we get containment.
Doug, let's talk about training and preparation, because it sounds like you and your crew arrived at the scene knowing what you were doing. What kind of training goes into your department to make sure you're ready for an event like this?
We have fire meetings for training the two Tuesdays a month, and we go through all our equipment. We work on it. At this time of year, particularly, we make sure we get everybody refamiliarized with our grass rigs, our UTV, and we make sure everything's in proper working order, knowing that this is the time we're going to have, a chance for grass and or marsh fires. And anybody who wants to be a volunteer firefighter has to go through hours of training through a state certified course where they get a little bit of information on all types of fires. So.
And then, Lucas, what goes into preparing so you're ready to coordinate with, two-digit numbers of different departments to make sure everybody's on the same page?
It's years in the making. We have a long history of working with fire departments in the state of Wisconsin. So we have mutual aid agreements that kind of sets the tone of expectations as far as payment as well as training with our partners. We also engage in individual fire department training as the DNR, specifically around wildland fire, to reinforce tactics, strategy, terminology, so that we're speaking the same language when we do have a large fire like this breakout. And that kind of gets to the expectations of what they can expect us to do and what we'll be asking them to do. And additionally, if I'm speaking for myself, it's taken 24 years to get the fire qualifications I have, where I can feel comfortable coming into a scene like this. This is the first time I ever worked with Doug. So if you think of never working with someone and coming in to co-manage a large incident like that, that can be stressful in itself. But maintaining those positive relationships in advance of the need is real key. where we can quickly introduce ourselves, give ourselves a little bit of space to be our own people and recognize that we're all here to help for the common cause of putting the fire out safely.
Doug, a lot of communities in Wisconsin rely on volunteer fire departments. I spoke to folks from the Cornell Fire Department in Wisconsin a while back. I'm blown away by the amazing work volunteer departments do. Do you want to put in a plug for people in communities with volunteer fire departments to consider it? Check out what it would take to get involved.
Everybody should take an interest if they can. And if it's something that you do have a true interest in, get a hold of your city hall, get a hold of your local fire department. I can guarantee you every single one of them needs help. There's never enough people. As we move forward, you know, we're constantly looking for individuals that'd be interested in doing it.
Lucas, I think sometimes people might think, okay, well, hey, we're not California. Wisconsin's not a wildfire state. And I'm always thinking, hey, we have the most deadly wildfire in U.S. history, the Peshtigo Fire. It's been a while. Wildfires obviously do happen here. What do you want the public to know, to be thinking about, especially during this wildfire season, to make sure they're not contributing to the next call that these departments get?
Wisconsin does have a lot of wildfires. Generally, we're speaking 1,500 to 2,000 every spring. It's our mission and goal to try to keep 95% of those fires less than 5 acres in size. So most of the time, the public doesn't even know they exist. But we are entering the most volatile time in Wisconsin, being as soon as snow melts until generally around June 1st. As we progress in spring, the woods will start burning more actively than the grasslands. Right now, primarily we're having fires in the grasslands, but when the pine starts burning in the end of April and early May, we can have running crown fires. 2 years ago, we had the Pallet Fire, which burned 700 acres and multiple structures near Coloma. And it does happen in Wisconsin. And again, some of our regulations help prevent that from having the same occurrence. So, you know, number one, I would say don't burn in the springtime unless you absolutely have to. If you do have to, go to 188 Wisburn or go type burning permits under the DNR website, and you can see what the burning laws are. We do require burning permits in all areas of DNR protection from snow melt until June 1st, other areas a little throughout the summer. And it really restricts the burning to the hours of 6 p.m. to midnight because it's less dangerous then. And it requires daily authorization. So every day that you want to burn with a burning permit, you need to check the website or call that number. And that will let you know if we're allowing burning that day, because we shut burning off when we see, I guess, bad fire weather coming into the area where fires will have a higher likelihood of escaping.
We'll leave it there. Lucas, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
And Doug, thanks again for being with us.
Thank you.
That was Doug Dewhurst, Interim Fire Chief of the Berlin Fire Department in Green Lake County, and Lucas Schmidt, Forestry Supervisor for the Department of Natural Resources based in Waupaca. They were both part of the response to the 750-acre Big Island Fire in Green Lake County 2 weeks ago today.